You are listening to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast, episode 21. And today I'm talking to Casey. She is from Brick by Brick Wealth, and we are chatting all things real estate. Hey, friend, I'm Sarah, and welcome to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast. I am here to show you that financial independence can be for anyone who wants it badly enough, and that investing in real estate doesn't have to be scary, take a vast DIY knowledge, or involve heaps of debt. When I am not sharing my own progress to FI, I'll be picking the brains of fellow like-minded, debt-conscientious investors. I am so glad that you are here, my fellow aspiring retirees. Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah, and I'm here with Casey today, and you are off of Instagram is how we know each other, and you are Brick by Brick Wealth. Is that correct?
Yes, and thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Yes, this should be so much fun because we have very similar interests, and so I feel like we're going to talk like old friends. So.
Yes, I know. I can already tell.
Awesome. So just start by kind of giving us a background on you. So for people who haven't followed you before.
Well, it all started way back when, you know, honestly, I used to live in California. So now I live in Memphis in Tennessee, but I used to live in SoCal and real estate. I grew up in a household where my dad was always rehabbing a project. We lived in a fixer upper for like forever, 10, 12 yeah. years. I couldn't go to sleep if I didn't hear a hammer going in the middle of the night. So I just loved houses and everything that went with it. But you know, I went to school, got my college degree and everything at Cal State Fullerton in SoCal. And then I got my public relations degree and went and got a job, 9-to-5 job. Actually it was 9-to-6 in Newport Beach. And the drive was like an hour and a half, you know, in traffic. And I didn't like it. And I would be crying on the way home, like, this sucks, it's so hard. And I get home so late. And then, you know, the company shut down because of the owner's some personal reasons from him. So it was a blessing in disguise. And I said, you know, this is my opportunity to do something else, to do something that I really love. And my dad always taught me, and I always tell everybody this, you know, he always said, don't follow the herd of cows, like go your own direction. You know, when you see the traffic on the freeway and there's, you know, one side of the freeway is in bumper to bumper traffic, they're all going to work. And the other side is free flowing. Like, where are those guys going? You know, where are they going where there's no traffic? They're going the opposite way. They're doing something else, something different. They're not following the 9-to-5 lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, this is my chance. Do what dad said, do something different. What do I love? And I said, I love real estate. I love houses. I think, you know, well, on my weekends, my free weekends, I would go to every open house that I saw and I would go inside. Like that was my idea of fun. My idea of fun was going to look at all the-
We have a similar idea of fun.
Yes, go to look at all the new builder homes. Cause at the time, you know, mm-hmm. in 2005, 2006, 2007, there was a bunch of new builds going on in Southern California out towards the desert in the Inland Empire, a lot of new houses being built and I loved new houses. So I just loved real estate and I said, okay, I'm gonna get my license. So I went and got my broker license and being young, you know, in my early 20s and then also looking young was really hard for me in Orange County to sell people's $1 million homes.
Yep.
You know, so it's like, you know, when you're 15, 16 years old, you don't want some 20-some-year-old who looks like she's 16 to sell you a $1 million house.
For so people who really can't hard. See or don't know what you look like, you still look like you're 16.
I know.
We both have this problem.
My sister is 10 years younger and people say look like twins. So it's always like, hee hee, you know.
Yeah, you're like, she's the older you get, one. The less upset you are about it.
The younger one. You know, but so I was like, okay, so that was really hard. So I said, well, how can I make money in real estate? And that's when I found investors because investors will take anybody, you know, they're like, oh, sure, little girl, you want to find me some investment properties, you go for it. Mm-hmm. So I found my niche, helping real estate investors find flips and, there weren't really finding rental properties cause you really couldn't find good, you know.
So were you essentially wholesaling? Did you get them under contract or?
Well, I was their buyer's agent. So yeah. I was a buyer's agent.
Oh yeah.
So I would find properties on the MLS. And at the time, you know, after the market crash, there were a lot of short sales and foreclosures and REO listings. So they were off the MLS. But a lot of investors, you know, Southern California is large, and I might, you know, my investors would be in Orange County, but the property might be in LA, or the property might be in Fontana, which is, you know, it could be an hour drive or so. So they weren't really wanting to go drive there and find, look at all these properties themselves to find out that they weren't good deals or they were good deals. So I would use my gas and my time, and I would go look at the properties, and I would evaluate if it was a good deal. And if it was, then I would go to them. So I would show.
That's such a good experience.
Yeah. I know it was. I've seen so many houses. I can't even count that high. But so that's where I found my niche, and I loved it. And then I got married, and my husband and I were like, oh, we really need to do this. But, you know, we don't have money to flip houses and stuff. Like, we don't have that kind of cash, you know, $700,000, you know, to buy it. Then you got to flip it to make it a million. Like, I don't have that.
Right.
So it's like, well, what can we do? You know, let's do rentals. And so we look into rental properties in California, but they were still out of our price range. It was still too much. And then my husband got a really good job opportunity in Memphis doing something that he wasn't really qualified to do. It was an amazing chance. So we picked up and we moved, and I had a 2-year-old.
I was going to say, did you have kids yet? Yeah.
Yeah. I had a 2-year-old, a 3-week-old. So we literally 3-week-old on the plane, and my cat and my husband. Yeah. The cat's a whole other story on the airplane. Let me tell you, he got out of the bag. The cat got out of the bag.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, on the airplane. I know. So
you're like the horror stories the flight attendants talk about.
That would be a whole hour story if I told you about the cat on the airplane.
Oh my goodness. Very memorable. Well, you'll have to do like a YouTube video on YouTube channel, right?
Only with my husband, because he was basically taking care of it while I had my kid sleeping in my lap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so we got to Memphis, and you know, I still had my California broker license, but I wasn't practicing real estate anymore. And I just saw Memphis as a gold mine. I was like, OMG, there's houses.
Because Memphis prices are reasonable, especially then. So about what year was this? Like 2012?
2013. Yep. Yeah. 2013.
So kind of in the recovery phase, but not quite. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I saw houses for $7,000, $10,000, and I thought, oh, we're going to be rich. No. I'm going to buy these houses and rent them out, you know, and then you like drive to.
There's some dicey areas of Memphis. Yeah.
You drive to the neighborhood, and you're like, oh, never mind. I take that back. I'll pay more. Get me out of here.
People look at the cap rates and just start buying stuff. And I'm like,
oh. I know. When people are talking about the 2% rule, you know, and like, I go, well, what area is that in?
Right.
Know?
Like, where are you going to, would you stay there overnight?
Are you wearing a bulletproof vest to walk to your property, you know, to get there? No, thanks. Like, I don't want to drive there during the daytime. Nevertheless, own something there. So, you know, my bubble was a bit burst, you know, at the time. I was like, shoot, I'm really not going to make it rich buying these $10,000 houses. So we started getting more realistic and doing more market research, and we started buying single family rentals in B and C class neighborhoods and putting in good quality tenants. And that's kind of how we got involved with investing in rental properties, which is what
do you remember your first house that you guys ever bought?
Yes. Yeah. We still have it. Awesome. I mean, the first house we ever bought was the one we live in. But
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The second, the one for investing purposes.
We did. It was in East Memphis. We still own it. I think we bought it for like $92,000, and we put some work into it. Not a lot, really. We scraped the ceilings, which is not something I would do now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't even scrape ceilings in a rental house.
No.
But, you know, we wanted to make it look really nice, like we would live there, and we go a little above.
It's
and
so
beyond.
Sticky to scrape ceilings. Like, it's such a mess.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. It's a huge mess. And it really wasn't necessary. It was a lot of work for, you know, it's not like we made any extra money by scraping the ceilings.
Right. Like, I can't live here. There's popcorn ceilings, said no one.
I know. Says nobody ever. I know. Even my friend's houses down the street have popcorn, and they don't care. So they're not even rental houses.
Like, you might notice it when you walk it, but after that, once you're there for a while, you kind of forget.
I would never scrape a ceiling of a rental house ever. I mean, maybe if it was an A-class neighborhood or something where it was like, you know, but not in C-class and B-class neighborhoods, I would scrape the ceilings. But, you know, we did those sorts of things as a new investor, and you learn. And it was, you know, a lot of, I got good biceps and triceps from doing that.
Nice. Did you know a lot of handy skills growing up with your dad, or were you involved a little bit? So what are your skills? What do you like doing?
Well, I don't like doing anything.
Yes, outsourcing is your best friend. We'll have a fun conversation around that.
I like to watch, is what I like to say. I know a lot about rehab and about rehabbing. I know a lot because my dad would do it all. And then my husband is just like my dad in the way that he likes to do it all himself. So we rehabbed the house we lived in California. We rehabbed my husband's mom's house out here, our house, and all of our rentals. We do all of them ourselves.
Wow.
And we He learned it all by, you know, YouTube and just trial and error and doing it. And he does an amazing job. I help, but I'm more of like the yard work person.
So you bought your first property ever was, you said like 90,000, 92.
Yeah.
And what does that rent for in Memphis?
So it's renting for $1,150.
Okay. Nice.
And yeah. We could get more. So if she moves out, sometimes she pays late, and when she pays late, then it's more.
Yeah.
But 10% more. But
this is a thing that new investors don't realize is after you've had a few properties, you like late fees. I don't know if you guys still feel that way. Do you get excited about late fees?
I do. I do. I'm like, oh, you know, you're late, but well, you know,
is that $100
for me?
Do you do just like one flat rate with your late fees, or how do you structure yours?
Well, yeah. So the most you can charge is 10%. Mm-hmm. That's like the law. Although in the beginning, like our old mentor would tell us what he does is he charges 10%, mm-hmm. but then he also charges an extra $40 a day after the fifth day.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, yeah, but that wouldn't hold up in court. Like I talked to my attorney and I was like, look at this guy's lease. Like, this is what, you know, he does. And he's like, yeah, you really can't ask for that. You know,
right.
You can't make someone pay hundreds of dollars a month, you know, $40 a day extra in late fees. So I was like, okay, well, I don't feel comfortable, you know, having a lease agreement where I can't really enforce the rules. Like I want to feel so strong and confident in my lease agreement that I'm not afraid to use it if I have to, like, you know, in court. Yeah. I don't want the judge to throw me out because I have too many things that aren't allowed.
Right.
So now it's just a 10%. That's what they pay. 10% if they're late.
Yep. Yeah. It's very similar in Indiana, which is crazy because we don't seem to have rules where I live. Like Indiana just doesn't care. But that is one thing. They don't allow like serial late fees is how they like term it. So you can't do the $40 a day here either and have that hold up in court. So
yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. But I do like the house. It's in a really good area and it's appreciated a lot since then. And I would say probably now we could probably sell it for almost 200 maybe.
Yeah.
It's gone up a lot. So not that I want to sell it. So no one ask.
Right.
I get those texts all the
you
time.
You don't want to sell your home. Yes. I bet. Because you're like not, you don't live there. It's not owner.
Oh my God. I got a text the other day from a wholesaler. You know how they text bomb you all the time and call you. We want to buy your property at 123 Main Street for 10 cents on the dollar. So, they said, you know, we'd like to buy your house, your property, you know, for $74,000. And I'm like, no, it's probably worth almost 200,000. And I just laughed.
Hey guys, sorry for the interruption, but I really wanted to come on here and talk to you about the management program that I use to manage my real estate properties. And it is called Avail. If you have not heard me talk about it, I'm extremely obsessed with it because it is like Cozy on steroids. So I do all of my tenant screening through there. I can do background checks, I can do criminal checks, I can do eviction record reports. You can have the tenants pay for their own background checks. And you can also push your advertisement for your properties out on various platforms. And once you get it listed, people can apply. You can add custom questions to your pre-screen. And then once they're in, you know, the system and you've chosen your tenant, they can do all their rent collection through there. They can put their security deposits in. They can show proof of insurance. And my absolute favorite part, which is really hard to find, is it is a one-stop shop because I can do all of my lease forms electronically. Goodbye paper. This is my favorite thing, especially as a real estate investor that has aspirations to be a passive investor. I want it all to be able to be handled on my phone, and I can do that with Avail, which is awesome. So if you want to check it out, I highly recommend pop over to Instagram, go in my bio, click on the link, and right at the top, you're going to see my favorite, you know, landlord software right at the top called Avail. Please go check it out.
So how many properties are you at today, or how many units?
So we just buy single families. We are just pretty traditional with 20% down. So we go buy as we can save. And so we have, we own 6 properties and 5 we rent out.
Awesome.
Obviously the one we live in is ours. We were wanting to buy 2 last year, but with the coronavirus and all that, and then I was starting my coaching program, I was like, you know, let's just forget this year and we'll just move on to the next year.
Yeah.
And so hopefully this year, you know, we can catch up.
So tell me how you got into that. Like, how did you find coaching and what are you doing with that?
Sure. Well, you know, rental properties really was amazing because it, you know, creates passive income. You don't do a lot of work. You do a lot of work up front, you know, finding your market, buying the property, fixing it up, getting a tenant inside. But after that, it's really smooth sailing.
Right. It's and, like a feast and famine business. That's what I keep telling people. I'm like, you want to die for like 2 months. And then you're like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever done.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Collect that first rent check and you somehow forget all the pain and struggles.
It was so worth it. So like, I started telling my friends, like, you guys got to do this, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you guys, like, you know, I have friends that are nurses. I have friends that, you know, stay-at-home moms and their husbands do, you know, work. A lot of friends in my neighborhood. It's so amazing that I have friends in my neighborhood because in California, there was no one my age that owned a home.
Yeah.
and we rented because the houses cost too much. So anyway, it's really cool moving here because people my age actually own houses.
Are homeowners. Yeah.
Yes. It's really cool. Perfect little American pie sort of situation. Oh,
totally. Yeah.
I love.
Midwest strong.
Yeah. So like I try to tell them about it. Like, come on, you guys, you got to do this too. You know, an extra $400 to $500, you know, in your bank account every month. It doesn't cost, you know, just a down payment. Not a lot of work. I'll show you how to do it. Oh no, we can't do it. Oh no, that's not for us. Oh no. Like, no. So it's like, well, geez Louise, like none of my friends are interested. So I was like, other women and families could benefit. People think, like I used to think, you have to be a millionaire to invest in rental properties. You can't be an investor unless you're some big dog.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you just need a down payment and it's really not that difficult. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Instagram because I don't know where else to go. Yeah. And you know,
such a good community on Instagram.
I know.
For women real estate investors.
I'm not a big social media person, you know, at all, really, my own personal life. So it was a challenge for me, but I got on and I was like, I'm going to find other people that are like me and I'm going to help other people realize that you don't have to work forever. You can find financial independence and supplement your income with rental properties. And like I say, one brick at a time, like just one rental property at a time, slowly, surely wins the race. And it makes such a difference in our lives. Like just from those 5 properties that we have right now gives us a second income.
Yep.
So, exactly. And like what I was really excited to talk to you about, because like you're a mom too. So I don't know if you would relate to this, which I haven't really shared with anybody else, but is like, besides like the money aspect of rental properties, it's given me something else.
Yeah.
It's given me this, like, oh, how do I even say it? It's given me like self-worth.
Yeah.
You know, because I went to school, I have a degree.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't make money for my family. Like I don't have a job. I don't contribute financially. I feel a little worthless, you know,
that's how you're not going to like, okay. I offend people with it, but I hate like the MLM, like marketing companies, like don't like, sorry, if you do that.
No, I don't.
I'd be like, hey, do you have one of those before I bash it?
No, bash it.
I don't want to be like a franchise making other people buy the stuff. Like I don't want to be in a pyramid scheme. Like I would like to bring income in, but
no.
Yeah, and it's, and you can build a pretty passive lifestyle, but you have the flexibility where like you could throw the kids in the car and like meet a contractor or a property. So,
my kids have been to so many houses now, two of them are in school, but before that they would come with me and sit there all day long with their snacks and their toys while we rehabbed, you know?
Yes.
And now they'd be able to do yard work. But like before rental properties, I did Etsy. I had a little Etsy business and I tried to sell handmade stuff on Etsy, but it's like, I was taking time away from my family and you know, you're capped on how much you can make because you have, you know, you can only make what you can make with your time. Like I can only make so many items a day. I can only make so
your
much
time is a limited resource. And that's the hard part about like being a maker of stuff.
Exactly. And I was like, this is terrible, you know? So really it was my sister, who told me, you know, Casey, you really should, you know, I know none of your friends want to buy real estate and she was too young to want to do it too. But she's like, you really should take this and try and, you know, see if anyone else would be interested. Maybe you could help other people online buying their first rental property. And so it was her inspiration that led me to say, you know what, that's a really good idea, Haley. Let me check that out. And so it's been really amazing. And I spent a whole year creating my program. And it's a 6-week immersive course.
Awesome.
And I provide coaching along the way for a period of time as well. And it's like so exhilarating because I get to see all these people that didn't have passive income before and now they are in contract on their first property. They're going to be getting passive income, and it just fuels a fire for more and more. It's really addicting, rental properties.
Yes. Yes.
And it's so easy. It's easy to do it once you do the first one, and you don't have to keep learning new tricks.
So with your coaching program, do you do all of yours with, so you've done all of yours with like conventional mortgages. Is that how you talked? Have you done any other methods along the way to get your portfolio going?
No, we have a HELOC. We did just get our new HELOC because with, you know, the
is
crazy
that on
market.
Rental, or is that not on your house?
It's we have a HELOC on our primary residence. It's what do you do now?
So now I've done everything. But it's all out of necessity. Like, it's not like I like set out to be like, oh, I'm going to learn to have, get private money lenders. I was like, oh shoot, this is where I'm at with life. So the first three houses we brought 20% down conventional. And then the third rental, so our primary residence was one of them. And then two rental properties. And then the third rental, I didn't have enough cash because I run it really lean. Like, I probably give people anxiety with how low I run my cash. But I was like, we have to buy this house at $60,000 and it'll rent for $980. And so I'm like, we're going to figure this out. And so we did a portfolio loan with the bank, which is a commercial loan, and like use the equity in our other two properties to buy that. And then my house hack I bought with private money because I was getting divorced. And so I was like, I don't want to own this because I don't want, like, me and my daughter are going to be living here. Like, I don't want that to be at risk in the whole process. So I was like, I'm going to buy it differently so it's not subject to the divorce, and then we'll have a home that we don't have to worry about like someone going after.
Yeah,
not mine. So, and then I house hacked it, and then I'm in the process of refinancing it right now, so then I'll own it. So
cool.
Yeah, that's so, did all the things, but it was just like, hey, this is where I'm at, and then I have a problem of like low cash, or I have a problem of I don't want my name on this house, and then like solving it. So
yes, my problem is we are I'm a little more riskier than my husband, and he is very risk averse, and he would rather us just pay off all our properties right now and wait.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, no.
Is there a certain like threshold you're trying to get to for cash flow?
You know, the goal, and I think it'll happen really quick as soon as we start buying more houses, is if we can make it to 10 to 15 houses, we'll bring in $100,000 of cash flow a year.
Yeah.
And really that was always the initial goal. If we could just make $100,000 a year passive income, we really would be kind of set for life. Like, of course, everyone wants a huge, you know, massive mansion and a sports car and a beach house and a lake house. But really, you know, getting down to the bottom is if I could have $100,000 in cash flow, that we wouldn't have to rely on Blake's job. We wouldn't have to rely on anybody else. You're not relying on a pensions, which don't exist anymore. You don't have to rely on Social Security, you know, that's really the initial goal. And I know that that's not going to be a problem, because even right now with the five that we have is really good money.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know.
So when you run your numbers, you said you don't do vacancy. Do you do CapEx or maintenance or anything in there?
No, I don't. And so when I say 400 to 600 a month cash flow, I don't count for that. It's all just PITI is what I count.
Okay.
Because some of
just
my,
so people listening can like figure
right,
that
yes,
out.
Yeah. No, I don't. Because, you know, if you do that to
everyone has
property,
their own method. Yeah.
They do. And if you look at evaluating a property before you buy it and you take out all those little things, I feel like the numbers always look bad.
Yeah.
So what I teach and what I tell people are, okay, run your potential cash flow with all of the things. Take out vacancy, take out CapEx, take out, you know, maintenance and repairs. Take out your percentages if you feel safe with that. Now, only take out, you know, fixed expenses, PITI. Now that's going to give you your highest cash flow. And over here you have your lowest potential cash flow. So really your cash flow is going to be somewhere in the middle between this range. And that's how you should evaluate a property, is don't look at the worst case scenario. Don't look at the best case scenario. Look at both scenarios, and you're going to get something in the middle, because your cash flow is going to fluctuate every single year.
Yep.
Some years you're going to have a big expense. Some years you won't have any expenses. Some years you might have a $50 line item for a repair, you know, so it really fluctuates. So when you're evaluating a property, don't look at the worst case or the best case. Look at both of them together, and it'll be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. So I just had this long talk with Felipe Mejia. So he did the Real Estate Rookie podcast. We talk a lot about this because I'm a really conservative person. And so I run it with like every possible little number in there. And then I really want to buy this property. So we almost did a deal together last week, but then there was an association on it that was a surprise, and they were like, no, you can't be an investor. So I hate HOAs.
Yeah.
And so we were talking, and he's like, what's your cash flow? I'm like, just like a hair under $200 for this door. And he's like, I'm not investing with you. That's crazy. And I'm like, no, it's a really good deal in this area. And then he's like, how are you running the numbers? And he's like, okay, we're going to run it my way, which is like the, I don't know, I now call it like the Felipe method, but it's yours. It's like, literally, he's like, you're making it too complicated. Like, take out vacancy, you're self-managing, you're doing all the things. And then his cash flow is more like $800 a unit. So I'm like, well, now it looks spectacular, but I ran at the worst case scenario. And he's like, yes, but are you really going to set aside vacancy and CapEx and maintenance, and you're not going to pay yourself for a property manager? So I think there's a difference between like the running the numbers safe scenario and then like real life cash flow looks differently.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And that's why
definitely the number in between. Like, I almost like to run it both ways now that I did that with Felipe.
Yeah,
like,
because it's really more realistic.
Yeah, it really is, because I'm like, I'm front loading all my CapEx. Like, I'm about to drop like $10,000 in this property to get it up, and then I'm not going to have a whole lot.
Yeah. And so when people run it like that, you know, it gets discouraging. And so a lot of people don't take the first step and they don't go buy their first house, because when they run all these potential scenarios with houses they see on the market, they're like, oh, I won't make any money. Oh, I'll make any money. I won't make any money. It's like, well, you're running worst case scenario. Of course, worst case scenario doesn't look good. Never does. Right.
Yeah. You know, but I do like that the worst case scenario reminds you that you could have property management if you wanted to. Right. So I'm like, I like to, I like the both combo. I think that's where I'm at currently. I'm slowly switching to the dark side.
And you know what I like to say too, is like, even worst case scenario, you're still making money. Worst case scenario, it's still positive. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're telling me I buy a property, worst case scenario, make $180 a month. Okay. Yeah. You know, now if you say worst case scenario, it's negative cash flow, 200 a month. That's definitely not something I want to do. So no, thank you. But worst case scenario, it's 200 bucks instead of 400. Sweet.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. It's such a good point. And then your asset is paying itself off too, which people don't realize about real estate, like the other benefits of real estate. So like,
oh my God,
even if your cash flow is skinny in your worst case scenario, it's paying itself off. And eventually you're not going to have a mortgage on that property unless you refi it again. But that's kind of the dream.
And people complain, oh, well, what about all these expenses? It's like, well, really, like, you're not paying for that. Your tenants are.
Right.
Your tenants are paying your mortgage payment. They're paying the interest on the loan that you have. They're also paying your property tax. They're also paying your home insurance. They're also paying for all the repairs.
Yep.
Plus you get some extra to go get your nails done, you know, and save for your next house. So they pay for everything. So yeah, you need a new air conditioner, but guess what? Now your property is worth more.
Yep. Exactly. So. And you can, that's a thing you depreciate over time as well. So there's like massive tax benefits. The first year we did like a giant renovation and we got like a biggest tax return, and I'm used to the vein of like the W-2 job where you're like, you don't want a tax return. You want it to be zero. And I was like, did we do something wrong? Like, is the government going to come after me because I got like a good tax return this year? But it's like, no, you spent so much money and it's a loss on the business. And so that goes against your, like it decreased, we decreased our taxable income by having a loss on the business, which is
crazy. But you know what? That came back and bit me in the butt because we did a huge rehab on a house. And so we didn't really make a lot of money that year, you know, on paper. And so we went to go buy another house and they're like, oh, your debt to income is too high because you, you know, you didn't show enough income or whatever. And I was like, what? So luckily our loan officer is amazing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, look, you have a tenant in there, right? And he's only been in there for a few months. I'm like, yeah. You know, the reason why we had such a loss is we did a major rehab on this property, you know, we spent $15,000-$20,000, you know, on this house. So he's like, all right, look, prove that he's been paying you every month and then we'll count the income. You know, because usually, you know, you have to have the property on your taxes for a year before they'll count that as income, your income, to qualify for the next property.
Portfolio loans, you don't have to worry about that.
You don't? Okay. Well, they're all in our name.
Yeah.
So he was cool. And he just let us show that he's been paying. So we were able to use that as qualifying income. So then we had that's no problem qualifying. But but that's interesting about the portfolio loan.
Yeah. It's like the magic thing that I try to tell everyone about, like, go try to find yourself one. And oh, remind people how old your kids are, because I think this is a common thing that people talk about. And I think women like use this as an out to like avoid real estate because you can do this with kids. It's not that hard.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I mean, it's hard at first.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's really just the only reason why it's hard anyway is because you don't know what you're doing. You know, once you know what you're doing, you know what to expect, you know what comes next, and it's not hard.
Yeah.
So my kids are 9, 7, and 3. Mm-hmm. I've got a fourth grader, a first grader, and then Cody stays home.
Yes.
So, you know, and I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I manage my rental properties by myself, and I have all this time. And one of my little mantras that I say is, most weeks I spend 0 hours managing my rental properties, because yep. It's true.
It's very true. So I have like my two units that have their tenants that are renewing every year. I went to both of them one time this year.
Yeah.
And one was to screw a new piece of siding, like to screw a piece of siding back in on the side of the garage. And then the other one was the furnace, like didn't kick on and it just needed like cleaned out for yeah. winter maintenance, because I didn't realize you should like probably service your furnaces once a year.
So, I know, honestly.
Now I'm just gonna like add that to my list of like, go check all my furnaces.
You know, one of our tenants, she does it herself. She's like, oh yeah, I have my HVAC guy. He comes and services it every year. I'm like, you're the best.
Oh my gosh, that's phenomenal. Can I get her as well?
She even has her own guy come fix little things. Like, she doesn't bother us unless it's a major issue. And I'm like, that is the dream tenant right there.
That is the dream tenant.
We won't be renewing you, and we will not be raising your rent. Please stay as long as you'd like. Are you hiding a dog from us? I don't even care.
Don't even care. Talk me through your system.
Okay. My system is easy. It's called, I open Excel and I type it in.
I still do Excel for our expense sheets too.
It's bad. Really like, well, actually now I use Google Sheets because I'm afraid like my computer's going to die and then I'm just going to all be lost. So yeah. And so now I have Google Sheets and it's just so easy. Like, I have one tab per property. There's not a lot that goes into it. All you really have to write down is any maintenance. And if you go to the property, you know, you write down your mileage back and forth. But that's it. You don't really need to write down anything else. You know, I do have a separate tab with, you know, what is my insurance company for that property? Now they're all the same now. And how much is it? When does it renew? You know, what are the property taxes? Honestly, I don't even think I write that down.
Yeah. I have all my insurance bundled together too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to have Liberty Mutual for my house, our cars, and all our properties, but we had a claim. Now this is different in every state, but we had a claim on a property out here. And all of our premiums started going up.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, my husband used to work for insurance in California. And in California, that's not allowed. They won't, like, penalize you for having a claim by raising
your premium. No, they love it around here. Midwest.
They do that. They're
going to charge you an arm and a leg.
Oh, so it was ridiculous. So our rental properties, the premiums were going up hundreds of dollars a month, and they were more than our primary residence. My primary residence is a 3,000 square foot house, and I have a pool. Talk about liability.
Right.
Yet, you know, my little rental property is a 3-1 and 1,000 square feet in Memphis was a couple hundred bucks more a year than my primary residence. I'm like, there is something wrong here.
Yeah.
So finally, I just fed up with it. And I went and got shelter insurance for our rental properties, and it got cut in half. So now I pay half of what I was paying Liberty Mutual for my rentals, but I do keep my primary, my cars, and my umbrella with Liberty Mutual.
Okay. Yeah. I keep all of my personal with Allstate. My Allstate guy's a guy. Like, we're like Allstate spirit animals. Love him. Yeah. He probably will listen to this. Hey, Joe. We talked today actually about real estate. Yeah. So all of my personals with Allstate, and then my business is now with like a commercial. So I have this commercial loan. So I have a commercial like insurance policy that covers everything. Because my husband, for like soon to be ex, was like a very high risk individual. And so it required a very special kind of insurance, which who knew your like personal, like life's activities would impact your insurance, but that's not gonna be a problem pretty soon. So like my life's about to get significantly cheaper. So
yes.
There's that.
Amen to that.
Oh my gosh, so excited. Like, look at my insurance rates going down. This is phenomenal. All right. So you do Excel. Do you do rent collection online? How do you do your rent collection?
Oh well, that's another, you know, thing in its own. Because I prefer, of course, everyone pays me electronically, but that's, you know, that's not the area out here. Some of my tenants don't even have an email address. Some of them don't have a bank account. Okay. So it's like, how am I going to demand that they pay me electronically when they don't even have a bank account? You know, they cash their checks at the grocery store.
Is that really common down there? Yeah. I wonder.
Yep. Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, I did not know that.
And I put in all my leases, like, you know, oh, you must pay electronically. You must, you know, take it right to my bank, however you want to do it. And it's like, they go, okay, sure. And they go, well, I'm trying to figure out how to do it. And I just don't know how. And, you know, we don't have a bank account. I'm like, well, let me email you. Oh, well, I don't have an email. It's like, what?
Yeah.
How do you not have an email address? So, So what
I'm
I've
also
done
like
now,
the Grinch. I'm like, this is a test. If you can't figure out technology, I'm not running you.
I know. And you know, that's kind of how I was. But when you get such a good, besides that, you get such an amazing tenant. It's like, okay, no worries, you know?
Yeah.
So what I have them do, what most of them do, one guy pays me on Venmo, and I know that's not always the preferred way, but and some other tenants, they take the money, they get a cashier check or a money order, and they take it to my bank.
Nice. Yeah.
And they deposit it into my bank account. So at first I was a little leery, like, oh, I'm going to give them my bank account information. Like, I'm giving them my account number. I'm giving them my routing number. Like, that dangerous. And it's like, well, you know, just kind of transfer chunks out at a time. So if anything does get stolen, it's not a lot, you know, and it's not happened, but yeah. That's really the best you can do. And I've got one girl now, cause I have Wells Fargo. She gives me money on Zelle, you know, through the Wells Fargo app, which she didn't have a bank account at first, but 3 years later, now she finally got one.
Oh my goodness.
Required for her job to do a direct deposit.
Yeah.
So she got one. So it's not bad. I used to go pick up rent. Tenants used to drop it off at my house when I was starting out. And I really try and do everything in my power to not let them know where I live.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's scary. Like, what if they're mad at me and they come burn my house down or something, right. You know?
So what else is a big question you get with coaching? I'm sure you have lots of clients that ask you. So are they always usually like just starting out and don't have properties? That's who you're targeting.
Yeah, that's my niche. I help people, aspiring investors who have no idea what they're doing, to help them get their first one. That's my goal. If you're experienced, you have multiple properties, you're going to know all the answers that I'm going to give you. Like, you know, if you're looking for creative financing and you're looking to get an apartment complex, don't come to me.
Yeah.
You know? I am here to help the regular person that wants to buy their first rental property and doesn't know where to start.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people will ask me the basic question, like, what do I do to get started? Like, they have no idea. And a lot of times, like, I would think, how do you not have any idea? But it's like, well, geez, Casey, you know, you were a real estate agent.
Yeah.
You took classes, you have your broker's license, you helped other people before you did this yourself. Like, I can't imagine not having any experience. And a lot of people rent their own houses. They've never gone through a purchase before at all. And then I have some students who are doctors that are like, just show me the fast track way. I don't have time to do research. I don't want to read books and do podcasts. You know, help me get a house in the next couple of months. It's like, okay, you know,
that
done.
I can do.
Mm-hmm. That I can do, you know. Yeah.
How are you finding clients, just out of curiosity?
On
all
Instagram.
On Instagram? That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, I have my email list that I send out. So when I have any openings, my program's not always open because I just take a few students at a time. So I'll notify my VIP list if people want to get first dibs, and I let them know first, and then I break it out to Instagram.
That's awesome. Yeah. Because I was looking at your thing and you were having like wait lists, but I'm like, that helps so much with bandwidth because then you can really set how many people you're working with at a time.
Yes. Yeah.
Imagine three kids keeps you very busy.
It does. And I am so thankful. You know, I have my mother-in-law, she moved by us a few years ago.
That's amazing.
So I'm from California to be by us. So she's on the street. So she helps me watch my little one a few days a week so I can do all of my stuff.
All right. So I think we've kind of gone through tenant screening a little bit. Any other words of wisdom? Like, because you said you do a phone call with yours. Do you like the phone call? I don't like phone calls because I feel like it's time consuming, but people swear by them to get to know people.
Yes. I have a whole list of questions that I give all my students and I tell them to pre-screen your heart out. Yeah. Well, you know, they'll call because I'll have my phone number on the sign and on the ads. And so they will call and I'll ask them all the questions. And if they can't give me straight up answers, like, and it's hard at first to ask someone, well, how much money do you bring in?
Right.
You know, it's like, you feel like, oh, that's invasive, like invasion of privacy, like that's personal information. It's like, yeah, it's personal, but you know, they're going to have to give it to you one way or the other.
Right.
So would you rather?
Mind, people like, I ask the people like the same, like 10 questions every time. So like, this isn't weird.
So. Yeah, I try and like kind of flow, make it conversational and, you know, oh, so what do you do for work? And, you know, how much do all the adults that are going to be on the lease bring in, you know, because it's not how much one person, but how much they all, you know, and oh, who plans on living there? And oh, why are you moving? Why are you leaving your last place? Oh, are you still in you still on a lease agreement? Or, you know, I try and conversationally get all the stuff out of them. And if I think that they'll be, if I don't like them, sometimes I'll say, you know, oh, okay, well, great. You know, I'm going to be setting up appointments next week. I'll give you a call back. And then I just don't ever give them a call back. if I'm like, yeah. Well, you don't meet the requirements, you know, but I had some lady yell at me and call me racist and stuff because I was like, I'm not racist. First of all, you're on the phone. I don't even know what color you are. Yeah. I said, second of all, I told you straight up, you don't even make half of what is needed to qualify. Right. Like this
your
is
income doesn't
qualification. Sorry. Like, and she was all mean to me and stuff. And I was like, goodbye. You know, hung up.
Yes. People get really mad because I go down an order of applicants. Like I walk down the list. If they have a higher credit score, we're going to go after that first. Like,
I talk to everybody on the phone and then the ones that I think are good, I'll show them. Mm-hmm. I'll bring the application with me and I'll have them fill it out. If I hadn't already sent it to them before through email, which I prefer to do. So they bring me a filled out application and then I say, and if you like the property, you can just hand it to me. Mm-hmm. You know, so fill it out in advance. That way I'm not sitting there waiting or, you know, it's just like get them on the hook then, you know, you like it. Okay, let's go. You know, and then I'll run their credit. So I've never really run anyone's credit and everything. Usually they don't qualify based on income or they smoke or they have pets.
Right.
And so after that, it's okay. You know, as long as your credit checks out and you haven't lying to me and you really do work there and you really do make that money and I can talk to your boss, then it's all good.
Yep. So. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, there's people that swear by the phone call. I try to avoid it with like a pre-screen. So yeah.
Well, I hate getting ready and getting out. So it's like, I don't want to get out, drive to the property.
Also, I've been stood up before because I didn't realize you don't show everyone the house. And that just like made me really mad because I'm like, no, I'm not like show up twice for you. You missed the
Oh, exactly. And if they're late and honestly, I stand out in the front and I wait and I look at their car.
Like, oh okay. Yeah. No, it's a big deal.
The littered with cigarettes and McDonald's because.
Yeah. Especially when they like roll up and you like go to meet them at their car and it like reeks of smoke, like smoke like rolls out when you open the door.
Oh,
and
but you
like,
don't smoke.
Really? And they don't smoke. And I'm like.
Oh, we smoke outside. Sure. Mm-hmm. I've made that mistake before.
Yes. Yeah. I even asked about like vaping now because I've heard like the residue from vape is really hard to clean out. So I don't know if people are going to tell me or not, but.
Probably not. You know, you do what you can do.
Right. Yeah. My smoking questions, I got really pretty good at it because I'll ask like, yes, no, or like only outside because a lot of like people who smoke will be like only outside. And I also disqualify them too, because I'm like, you are a liar. You're gonna make my house smell like
exactly.
Smoke.
Well, so. When you smoke and you walk inside, you're bringing the smoke inside.
Yeah.
Even if you smoke like outside,
The
residue is going to stand right by the door. It's going to all waft in the house mm-hmm. and then they're all going to smell. I mean, it's just like, come on. It's only a matter of time for you smoke in the house.
Probably my like only C property. I'm pretty sure the lady like smokes outside and I'm like, you know, we're just going to make it through.
My one tenant that, she's broken all the rules and, you know, but she pays me. So, and she's been my longest tenant so far.
Yeah.
So keep her in there as long as possible.
Right. That was not a fun one to turn over. So like, as long as you stay for like the length of this mortgage.
Luckily though, you know, we didn't do really any work to that property. We didn't even paint the inside. We just kind of, we made sure everything worked. We changed the outlets because I think they were 2-prong and we changed the 3-prong. So it would have a grand. We added a disposal, just did a couple things. We did do a lot of landscaping, took out a tree and redid the front yard and stuff like that. They had some stupid koi pond in the back before. So I had to take that out. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But otherwise I didn't do a lot of work on the inside. So when she moves out, I'll have to put a few thousand into it, but that's all right. Yeah. We hadn't done it yet. So
do the deep clean and do all the things.
Oh, it's going to need a full paint and carpet.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I say carpet, but I'm not putting carpet in.
Yeah. I was gonna say, are you in a vinyl plank now?
Yes, exactly.
That's where everyone
does. There now, but yes, we will be. And she asks every year, my allergies. I'm like, look, you had allergies when you rented the house. You knew there was carpet.
Yeah,
so I'm not putting in new floors for you.
Yeah,
you got a pit bull and lied to me about it, and you smoke, and you have people living there that aren't on the lease. So don't ask for anything extra. You're lucky you're still there.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Nope. You feel free to move out.
People get really demanding, and I'm like, no, this is my house. Like,
yeah, I mean, she asks every year, and every year I say, if you want to pay for it, you sure can.
Yep. And then, so I always like to ask people like, so you and your husband, you said you're really conservative. So talk me through like, so real estate, I feel like you do your 20% down conventional mortgages. Yeah. So you keep your like debt, like to income, like reasonable on the mortgage side.
Yeah.
On the personal finance side, do you guys like carry much debt or are you also very risk adverse over there?
No, we put everything on a credit card because we want the points.
Yeah.
We pay everything off in full every month and we don't carry a balance and we have amazing, excellent credit scores. And yeah, my husband brags
your
about his
power to buy your rentals. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but really anything over 740 is the same, you know, which I'm like, you mean I don't get a better rate for being in the 800s? No.
I know. Yeah. I just like, I hit the like 788 or something this year, like almost 800. I'm like, do I get like a prize? No, it's just,
I know. I didn't get any prize, but
believe me, I keep waiting for it in the mail. I don't think it's coming. No.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, you know, cash is king. So we try and keep a good chunk of cash. We have our HELOC in case of any emergency. And we don't carry any debt and we don't have any car payments. The only that we have is our houses.
Yep. Yeah. That's awesome. I find that a lot with people who do buy and hold investing is they keep their personal finances so clean. Like they usually keep like a personal emergency fund for like their household and like rarely have car debt, but usually like no student loans, like all that's kind of cleaned up. Yeah, and I think so I drive people crazy, like new investors, where I'm like, you need to clean up your debt first. And I'm like, but people that are like comfortably like scaling at a consistent rate and like getting to their goals, they don't have this anchor they're carrying around with them. So I think that's important to see whether you've like thought about it a lot or like made efforts or not. But it's definitely a commitment to like a lifestyle to like not carry debt because it's so normalized in our culture to have a car payment and it makes me crazy.
And we don't, and we're so cheap, you know.
Like, yeah.
If you might see in my stories, we just now decided to redo our kitchen.
Nice.
We've lived here for, this is the eighth year, and our kitchen is a POS.
Okay. Terrible. I need to go look at your stories now. I want to see this kitchen.
Yes. I think that the before pictures are still up. I posted them this morning.
Awesome.
They're bad. It's embarrassing. And so, but you know what? My whole life, you know, living here, my whole life, the past 8 years was like, okay, do I want to buy a rental property for 20 or 30,000 down, or do I want a new kitchen? And every year I said, well, my new kitchen isn't going to make me money.
Right.
So forget that. And my friends would be like, oh, your kitchen, when are you going to get your new kitchen? And it's like, well, I just bought another house. Well, I just bought another house. Well, I just bought another house.
Yeah. And that $600 a month. What is your kitchen going to pay you? Nothing.
I know. And that's what I kept saying, but it's really falling apart now. Like the whole front's falling off. I caught a door from falling off. Literally when I was frying tortillas one day and I'm like, okay, well I could have just gotten burned from oil. So this is dangerous. Time to go. Time.
All right. So anything else that you cover in your coursework that we haven't hit on? Because I'm guessing we kind of walked through, you know, like once you buy a property, like I feel like there's this moment of like, oh shit, I need to like do something with this house now. Like I have to like find tenants and renovate it and quote contractors.
Yes.
And
yes. Oh my gosh. You know, if there are any newbies out there that are interested, my program is from start to finish. It walks you through every step from the very beginning of finding your market. I specialize, most of my students are out-of-state investors. So if you're looking to invest out-of-state, this is definitely for you. It goes all the way through.
That was what I wanted to hit on. I knew there was one thing I wanted to do. Because you talk about out-of-state investing a lot, and this is the area I feel the least comfortable in because I'm like, I invest like right around where I live. And so I'm like, it doesn't make me nervous to invest out-of-state, but I just haven't done it. So. Yeah.
It's definitely doable. I have students doing it and it, you know, my program, the course program is 6 weeks and then we do coaching during that whole time. And then afterwards also to make sure I hold your hand through the whole process from start to finish. But I have my students, they're making offers within the fourth week of my program. Like they haven't even finished the course yet. And they're already like confident, like, okay, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So it's
plus you have the experience of being in California and knowing what it feels like to be like priced out of buying something.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So. And honestly, like,
are you having them self-manage their properties out of state too? Or no, they're doing like property management? Yeah.
Yeah. Property management. Yeah.
I feel like that's so necessary when you're.
Yeah, you know. It is. It really is. And now I feel like if I were to move, you know, since I manage my own that are here, if I were to move out of state, I would still manage them out of state until maybe I got a new tenant. And even then, because you can hire a real estate agent to do the work for you to mark the property and put a tenant inside.
Yeah.
Now, as long as you have your little team of subcontractors who can go fix the property for you,
right.
That's really all that you need to
have. I think I really just need a handyman and like subcontractors. Handyman. Like the handyman would be clutch. Because now, so my new obsession that I did for my house hack was I put like a keypad, like doorknob on, like an electronic one that I can like just like reprogram and so just like keypad in. So it was like, when they moved in, I let them choose their own like 4-digit code. And then that's how they like, I didn't even let them into their house. I'm like, here's your code. Have fun.
Yes.
We have downstairs. One house with I'm
code.
So lazy. No,
we have one house with a code too. But when we went to renew their lease, you're like, oh, and the battery died and I forgot the code. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Well, and they're just using the key now. And I'm just like,
It's fine.
I know. But yeah, so, but my program goes from start to finish. We talk about rehab, you know, huge rehab section. So you'll feel really confident doing all aspects of rehab. And then also land learning and property management, whatever you choose, it's all in there. You'll feel like a pro. So I love my program. I worked an entire year creating it before I brought it out to share with everyone. So it's awesome. That's awesome. I like it. My students like it. And yeah. I'll probably be opening up new spots in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. And this will take a little while to air. So definitely just like check out and see. But you have your wait list and your like email list and things. Exactly. So they can always like hop on there at any time. Which will be good because I have a backlog of podcasts going.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm like, this will probably be March or beginning of April. No problem. So
yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Because I do every 2 weeks because my podcast episodes are real long because I can't stop talking. So I'm just trying to like too. Give everyone some time to work all their way through.
I'm a blabber.
Same. It's a problem. All right. Well, this is really, really good and so interesting. So for my final question, I just want to go through, I've been like a big year of outsourcing. So this is funny because you talked about like you and your husband and how you're different, like how you're like, we need to like give some more things out. Like we don't need to be refinishing these hardwood floors. And so you seem to be a little more on like, we're like spirit animals with your outsourcing a little bit. And so what have you done like personally or in the real estate business is like change the game? Like I had my snowplow today and I was like, oh, my snowplow guy's here at 7 a.m. Best decision ever. So little things like that, that I try to outsource in my day.
Honestly, yeah. Like the little thing that like I said, we don't really spend a lot of time managing our properties anymore. The key is right. Picking really good tenants so you don't have any problems.
Yeah.
But the only really thing that we kind of outsource is a few times we'll have our little handyman guy go fix things here and there. Like one day, this is no joke. One of my tenants is like, I really hate to say this, but I think the house is haunted. And I'm like, are you joking me? Like, come on, girl. It's haunted. I'm hearing things up in the attic and da da da. And I'm like, oh my God.
Is it like an animal?
She's like, I looked up there. There's no animal, you know. Mm-hmm. First of all, actually, I lied. She did not say she looked up there. She said she's too afraid to look up there. I'm just like, oh my God. So go rent an apartment then if you're afraid to look in the attic. So I sent my handyman guy out there. Blake's like, I am not going to go over there and look around. Like, he's not one of those people like to go do that. He's like, no, you know? So I sent the handyman guy out there and he said that there's like some, like the, you know, like the eave of a house has the little grids and like, well, I guess the old owners had put up this like mesh stuff or something. So a bird had built a bird's nest in between. They were still on the outside of the house. Right. But you know, the attic is really echoey and stuff. So she was hearing this bird in the attic, but really he was still outside.
Right. It was like between the mesh and the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he went over there and fixed that for us and, you know, and did something, some other thing that she had, some electrical outlet or something. So it was like,
you're not going to have your own TV show about haunted like rental properties now.
I'm like, that was money well spent, you know? So I feel like just having that guy do a couple little things, has really changed it. That makes us feel rich.
Yeah.
You don't feel rich, you know, all the time, but it's like, wow, now I feel rich.
When I got a cleaning lady, I like felt that to my like soul. Yeah.
Oh, I tried that. I tried getting a cleaning lady too. And I'm really picky because like no one can do anything better than I can do it. That's what Blake said. He's like, we need to have somebody come do our laundry. I will pay a laundry service. How much does it cost? And I looked it up and it was like, I don't know, 99 cents a pound. I'm like, your pair of pants are 4 pounds. Like, I'm not paying $4 to wash your pants. So that's out, you know? Mm-hmm.
And then do you like sort your laundry and just pull out what you don't like to, like, I feel like the putting away the laundry is the hard part, not the washing.
It all lines up at the foot of our bed in these laundry baskets. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, we're a family of 5, so that's all. And then our kids just go through clothes like nobody's business.
Yeah.
It's
always covered in like food.
Constant battle with the laundry. Well, you know, you do the laundry, you put it upstairs and they don't put it away or they take something out of their shelf and all of it falls down. So when I say grab your dirty laundry, they grab all their clean laundry and they make me rewash it. That's how that goes.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Things I need to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. Just give your kids 5 pairs of pants and say there's one for every day of the school week.
Then you can wash
them on the weekend to start over.
Perfect. This is like, do we label them like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Like you get one pair of pants. I need you to make it last the whole day.
Put a tag. This one says Monday. Teacher goes, mm-hmm. How come your pants say Monday? Well, these are the ones I get to wear on Mondays. Seriously, I'm back.
It's fine. This is normal. Awesome. Well, it was so much fun talking to you. I'm excited to like watch your journey. So do you have big goals for this year? Anything you guys are trying to do? Are you buying another property? Or what are you guys thinking?
Well, I sure hope so. Gosh darn it. I want to buy one or two this year, and as long as everything goes well. And you know, I'm hoping to reach more people and help them buy their first property as well, because that is exhilarating.
Yes.
And I love it. So, you know, everyone can find me on Brick by Brick Wealth. If you guys want to follow me on the IG, that's where I'm mostly at.
Awesome. And you have a blog too, and you're on YouTube.
I have a website. And brickbybrickwealth.com. And I do have a YouTube, but you know, I'm just not that great at YouTube stuff. So I do have some videos.
I love IG because I can just do like all my reels and stuff there. So it's an addiction.
I know. My sister is big into YouTube. So she was trying to push me to do that. And I was like, I don't know, Haley, that's not really for me. So I
might hit up your sister for my YouTube usage.
She's good at it.
I need like a person to like manage that piece of business because I don't want to. So awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I'll totally let you go because we're over time like I always am.
That's fine. No worries.
But this was so much fun and I'm excited to follow your journey and look at, I need to go back to your stories and see your kitchen now. So I'm going to go do that.
Yes. Do it before it disappears.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It was a lot. Can you save it under like your house so we can go back? Because by the time this airs, people want to see it.
Good idea. Yes. I'll do that.
Give us some stories so we can watch your cabinets go from falling apart to beautiful. So.
Yes. Oh my God. It's going to take 3 months because the cabinets are on 11-week wait list right now.
Oh gosh. Yeah. COVID has made everything backlogged. So if people aren't actively doing real estate right now, it's like a ridiculous shortage of stuff at the moment.
Oh, and wood too. We need to redo our gazebo in the backyard because it's falling over and the price of wood is like ridiculously high.
The price of like, I swear I went to like Menards expecting to spend like under $100 and walked out with like $300 worth of trim. And I'm like, what the heck?
Oh my God.
And plywood. So I put these barn doors in my house. I don't know if you saw that, but like my plywood sheets were like $42 because they were out of like all the cheaper plywood. And I'm like, whatever, this is where we're at today.
I know.
Like I just spent $42 a sheet of plywood. This is
stupid. Expect your projects to take three times as long right now.
That's and apparently appliances are really hard to come by. So I'm contemplating stockpiling like a fridge and a stove in my garage.
I wanted to buy a new set during Black Friday for my kitchen, but they were all, at the time it would have been March till I would have got them. I was like, oh, forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because people are saying like if a tenant's like fridge breaks and you have to get new, it's like weeks until it gets delivered. Yeah. So I'm
You know what I would say in that case, have them go buy one on Craigslist or Facebook or the appliance resale store.
Right. Exactly. Awesome. Well, sounds good. Well, I will talk to you later and stalk your stories a bit on your renovation.
Yes,
and
ditto.
Hopefully we'll all watch you buy a house this year, which will be super fun. So
heck yeah, one or two. I'm ready.
Yes. Same here. Talk to you later, Casey.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Gosh, did you all just love this episode? I hope you're enjoying each of these podcasts as much as I am. If you are, please go subscribe to the podcast and spread the word by sharing your thoughts on Instagram. If you are not already aware, I'm pretty much obsessed with Instagram, so seriously, come find me. Instagram is the place where I'm going to announce every new podcast episode. I also share new products as I post them into my store. And I also am just going to be oversharing way too much about my personal life as a DIY landlord and a working boss mom. Thanks so much for listening.